Blog Talk Radio.
Don't mind if you got something nice to say about me. I enjoy an accolade like the rest. You could take my picture and hang it in.
Good morning and welcome to Solutions Life Personal Edition. I'm your host, Chickie Fitzgerald, coming to you from Tampa, Florida. Solutions provides practical advice from authors and experts on a wide range of topics for professionals to help you leave your legacy. Thursday lineup begins with Real Life Renovations with my co-hosts Phil and Amy Parham. At 10:30, Financial Health, 11 a.m., Giving and Faith in the Marketplace, and at 11:30, Intellectual Gumbo, where I'll do a review of the week with my co-host Chris Bradshaw. Stick around for that and add some spice to your day. Good morning. It is Thursday, March 26th, and I am indeed coming from sunny Tampa, Florida. That is a consistent part of my repertoire here. Phil, how is the weather in North Carolina?
It has been rainy and cold here. But we had some signs of spring the other day, but we're going to be back to 70 degrees on Sunday, so it'll be nice.
Oh, that sounds great. This is my favorite time of year here, and in honor of this show, I have started walking again in the mornings, and it is absolutely glorious out there.
That's
this
great
time of year.
That is great.
Although I will have to tell you that the last time I started my campaign to get fit, I went out walking, and I think I had shared with you and Amy, I came back from my walk and came in. We live in a gated community, and I walked into the car gate and stepped over to the side because I heard the FedEx truck coming and was greeted by a snake and ended up going into the path of the truck and then went back away from the truck because I was trying to figure out which was worse, the snake or, you know, like a 2-ton FedEx truck, and ended up fracturing my ankle. And so, you know, that thwarted my workout efforts for quite a while. And yesterday when I went out for my walk, as I was coming back, I heard this rumbling and I looked back and sure enough, it's the FedEx truck. I thought, I am not walking through that gate. I'm walking through the pedestrian gate. So, anyway, well, today our sponsor of the show is Solutions Consulting Group and also the Barbados Tourism Authority. And the Barbados Tourism Authority has been a consistent sponsor of this show since the launch, and I am just so grateful to them. Barbados is such an amazing destination for those who haven't visited the island of Barbados. It is in the Southern Caribbean. Easiest way to get there is through either Miami or through San Juan. There are also some direct flights from New York City. And we'll talk a little bit more about them a little bit later. But first, I'd like to talk about our lineup today. And Phil is joining me. Amy is getting ready for a trip. So we are going to be talking to their trainer, DJ Jordan, and we'll get back to him in just a minute. On our 10:30 show, we are going to have in the financial health slot Pamela Yellen. She has got a book called Bank on Yourself and a program called Bank on Yourself and has some very, very interesting components of that program. And I am very interested to hear about that. And then at 11 o'clock on our Giving and Faith slot, we have got a really interesting guest, Monica Healy, who is actually 14 years old. She will be the youngest guest that we have ever had. And her father will join her, and he wrote a book called Monica and the Zamboni. And I am not going to give you any more than that. You need to tune in at 11 a.m. And then at 11:30, my regular co-host Chris Bradshaw and I will be doing our show called Intellectual Gumbo, where we just go back over everything that we heard this week and talk a little bit about that and our favorite books and just have a great time. So with that, Phil, let me have you introduce DJ. Good morning, DJ.
Good morning. How are you?
Just doing great.
Great.
Well, DJ came into our life when we got home from the Biggest Loser campus, and, you know, one of the things that I always talk about that I realized there at the campus was we obviously had great trainers, you know, Bob and Jillian, and we have a couple of other trainers that come in when they're not available, so we had access to some of the greatest trainers there, you know, available really from the country. And we knew that we needed that support system. You know, we had the doctors, we had everybody taking care of us. So when I came home, I go, I want to be very successful at this. One of the things that I talk to people about is having that good support system in your life and having experts around you that can help you go to that next level. So we searched around, and it was just a heart thing. I think that's something important. You know, we really just connected with DJ, and we felt like DJ had the right kind of attitude. He's a natural bodybuilder. You know, obviously that was, you know, he stayed in shape himself, and we thought, hey, this guy can help us get ready to do that. And then we just got to know him more and more, and he wanted to work with us. It's just been a great fit for us. And so that was kind of one of the things that we had other trainers offer to help us, but we just didn't really connect with them, and we just really made that connection with DJ, and he's just become a great friend, and we've learned so much from him through the process, and obviously he helped us. We lost more weight at home with DJ's help than we actually lost on the ranch. So,
oh, that's really
a lot of people weren't, you know, a lot of people weren't that successful when they got home. The wheels kind of fell off. So DJ would, I'll just say a couple quick things about him. He would pick us up on Saturday morning. He would not schedule any other clients. And a lot of Saturdays, a lot of Sundays, he would make sure that we had our food. And those Saturdays, he would schedule us to go out to a ball stadium, and we would run the bleachers. And it was just, it was a lot of fun. He would take us up to the mountains, and we would hike, and he would pack snacks for us. And it was just, he just pushed Amy and I. We would go hiking with vests on, weighted vests, and we'd text each other all the time. And he really just got intimately involved in our whole process, and we brought him out to the finale. And what was really cool about DJ is he actually he's helped several other people that were on the show. They kind of saw him as their trainer during this process. So, you know, Colleen over in Ohio, she would text or call DJ, and they would ask him questions. When people would get stuck, you know, and they couldn't lose any more weight, they would call DJ. So it was really neat that he just kind of become a part of the whole Biggest Loser family, and we just think he has
cool.
a lot to offer.
Well, DJ, he gave you a great intro. Is there anything you'd like to add to that? I'd like to hear what it was like to be brought into that family.
I was going to say, I don't know if I can top that one. He actually, that's a pretty good intro for me. So I'll just tell you just my opinion of the whole thing. Because of me understanding the show and knowing what abuse that they were going through, and this is a very quick process, and I know Philip can tell you as well, you're not really ready for it until you're on that ranch, and then they come home. And then, guess what? That's really where the ranch is that in your own home. I mean, he had to find a trainer. He had to begin life again. He had to work. He had to make time out for me. And I sometimes also felt like, hey, you know, I was kind of stingy. Like, I want to see you guys again, but I wanted to see how far I could push them, how far I could break them. And you know what? They were prepared. They were ready to train. They brought their game. I couldn't break them. I think they were well mentally prepared coming off the ranch. But when they came home, I know Philip will say, like, especially in that first week or two, you're kind of lost. It's like you've been on vacation, and it's like, I got to go to work. Oh, yeah, you're back at life. You're starting all over. So they had to regroup. But once they got regrouped, they were ready to say, this is part of my life. We've made a life change. We want to do this for life. And even today, it's great, you know, especially when you're training them, you can still push them just as hard. And they're used to it now, and they're excited, and they're sharing it with everyone. The trainer, I felt blessed to be able to train them and then be able to, you know, meet other people as well. So I know for me, it's a gratification. I mean, I'm so thankful that they came into my life, because it's not only as a friendship, but since I own my own place, it was easier because then I had time to allow for them versus working in a gym atmosphere. But there's several other thousand people now that are following them going, just if you can show me baby steps, or just tell me what to do if I'm at home, or if I have a gym, what do you recommend? What would you look into as a trainer? So there's a lot more to the story. I mean, you've got to really be prepared and be committed and be ready to take those steps like they were.
Well, that's a great place actually to start this morning, DJ, because we are going to be launching a 90-day challenge on this radio show, and want to be able to prepare the folks that want to participate in that. And we're not going to be starting it until April. But, you know, if you're thinking about getting serious, about getting fit, getting in shape, and yes, losing weight, we want to talk about those first baby steps because, as I mentioned, I mean, I was telling the story, you know, which is not something that happens to everyone. You know, I went out and bought my workout clothes and, you know, decided I was going to get in shape and, you know, actually got up and got out and you know, went for my first walk. And this was last Memorial Day, and then had this horrible accident where I ended up fracturing my ankle. And, you know, I don't know whether that would have happened, you know, if I had been in better shape to begin with or if I had stretched or, you know, I mean, all the things that you hear about people preparing. But where do people start? And particularly if they can't afford a trainer. I mean, it's wonderful. And you know, having a trainer is my goal again. But my husband and I have been in a financial place where we can't do that right now. So I have to live vicariously through you guys.
Phil, you want to take that one?
Oh, well, I can start, and I want you to fill in some things too, DJ, what you would take a new client. Why don't you do that, DJ? Why don't you tell the folks what you do with a brand new client and where you start, you know, point A?
Well, I think you pretty much hit it on the head where you said, what if we're in a situation where we cannot afford a trainer? I'll start with that program first. A lot of times, I'll have friends that'll say, hey, I can't afford you as a trainer. And, I always go, well, you can't afford not to have me as a trainer. I'm going to change your life. But I also want to know, are they ready to change their life? And the first thing I like to, especially for a new client, is, hey, it's accountability. Whether it's a husband-wife team, whether it's a friend, find someone that you can be accountable to. And I think that's what, as far as being a trainer for Philip and Amy, I was there for them as accountability. Hey, we know we can call him. We know we can text him. We know we can show up at the gym. But if it was someone that could not afford a membership to a gym, guess what? It's just called small baby steps, making change today. What are those changes? Okay, today I'm going to get off the couch. Today, instead of watching TV for an hour or 2 hours, I'm going to get up and walk. I'm going to get up and move. That's the changes that we need to see from people. Get up and do something. Find someone that you can walk with. There's plenty of buddy systems where people, you know, in every city have little couch potato walks and things that you can get started. There's things in your own home you can actually use. You can get a jump rope for cardio. You can get little bands to do bicep curls. You can do push-ups. There's things that you can do. It's just we need to be jump-started. And I think with your 90-day challenge, you guys are going to motivate a lot of people to say, you know what, I want to do it. I'm ready to begin. I want to do it with you. So people, just by little baby steps, start today doing something small. Write it down.
Yep.
Be accountable. If you're going to eat something, write it down and say, look, I ate this, and be able to show it. Get some help. If you're not sure, ask someone, ask a trainer, ask someone at the gym, ask for advice, get a nutritionist.
I can tell you that I ask a million questions. When they taught us a lot of stuff, but it was so much coming at us when we were on the ranch that I came home and I had just such a thirst for learning that I just would read books on my own, I would study. And, you know, one of the things, I was also going through a financial thing, so I would just take time out of my day and I would go to Barnes & Noble and I would sit down and read books for free. So, you know, I would just read all these books, and it's so confusing for people when they first get started. But I want to give them some baby steps that they can do. I tell you one thing you can start to do today is change up the way that you eat. You get 23% of your calories just from eating. So you're not a camel. You need to start trying to eat more times during the day and eat smaller portions. You need to, you know, a lot of the things we do on The Biggest Loser campus is we weigh our food and we write everything down. So I would tell people to write your food down, start getting accountability, like DJ said, to that piece of paper. For men, they might want to start with 2,000 calories and just see what that looks like, because I guarantee you that people are eating a lot more and they're getting a lot more calories than they really think, because unless you're writing it down, unless you're tracking all your liquid and all your calories, you don't know. I'll give you a perfect example. You pull into a convenience store and you go, I'd like to have a cappuccino, but there's no Starbucks around. Maybe I'll just get one of those little cappuccinos out of the convenience store, one of those little liquid things. A 12-ounce cappuccino from the convenience store has around 1,300 calories. I know a lady. I know a lady who was not losing any weight, and she was like, "I'm eating 1,200 calories a day. I'm working out." But she, and then her husband started going through and diagnosing. You know, there's the accountability thing again. He said, "Well, let's look at what you're eating," and then they figured it out that she was stopping and getting 2 to 3 of these a day on her commute. And he said, "Well, how many calories are?" She said, "I don't know. You know, I'm just writing down 100 or so. Or, you know, a couple hundred." Because she thought, "Oh, it's got a little sugar in it or something." So she wrote down a couple hundred calories. And she said, "I'm just not losing any weight." Well, he got the nutritional facts from the convenience store. He had to wait a few days to get it. But by law, you have, you know, they have to supply that to you. So they gave it to him. And she realized she was getting 3,900 calories a day from...
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that amazing? 36 ounces was, there was more, there's more than 100 calories per ounce in those drinks. Ridiculous. We don't even realize where all of the calories are coming from. The high fructose corn syrup, the aspartame that holds, you know, that's screwing us up. The sodas, the diet sodas are actually making us more hungry. You know, but, man, it's just, you just really need to start. I would tell people to start reading food labels, to start, you know, trying to learn about nutrition. And like DJ said, it's baby steps. So when we do our challenges, we talk about things like our core four, which is cardio movement. Just get out there and move. Optimal hydration, you know, rest and recovery, getting 8 hours of sleep every day, trying to de-stress your life because stress will make you hold on to weight. And then also developing a new eating plan. Like I said, eating 4 to 5 to 6 times a day, stabilizing your blood sugar, trying to pull sugar and salt out of your diet, just one thing at a time. You know, we do our daily emails, which we're talking about, which we just give people daily hints. People, it's too much, you know, for people to take all this in, and they try to change everything at one time.
Right.
And that's really the problem with a diet. And I know Lolo, our assistant, what I just want to say a good word about DJ, he's training her, and I think, DJ, what's she down, 35 pounds now?
35 and 7 weeks.
7 weeks, 35 pounds. And
wow.
She's a good-sized girl now. She's got some weight to lose. But here's the deal. She told me a couple of days ago, she said, "I'm so glad that I'm not on a diet." And I said, "Isn't that great?" She looks at this as a lifestyle change, and we just you know, we took the mayonnaise out and we replaced it with mustard, and we take the ranch dressing out, you know, with vegetables, and we replaced it with hummus, you know, and we just take small things out, and then replace them with something else. We just take the regular table salt out and replace it with sea salt, and then just study the, you know, take a good multivitamin and study the vitamin. Make sure it's got what you need in it for your day. And make sure, you know, try to get some more vegetables in and watch the dressings that you put on. It's just really small changes. And I know we had talked earlier, Chickie, and DJ can say this. I think he actually does go to people's houses and help them take stuff out of their cabinets. Do you do that, DJ, when you start with somebody?
I still do it. It's just... A lot of times we're confused because we're so used to the processed foods. We go out to maybe a sub shop and we're thinking, okay, I'll just get a sub sandwich. And like you said, Philip, it could be a drink. It could be a sandwich. And before we know it, there's 3,000 milligrams of sodium. And you've got a client that's retaining water. We've got a client that's eating 3,000 calories. And then when we bring it to smaller portions and they're like, "I'm full all day. I've ate 5 meals." Well, guess what? Your body's starting to change. It's starting to metabolize. Guess what? Your body's actually working. You're starting to sweat for the first
right.
time. There's so many changes that happen through this process. So if you go in their home, a lot of times you'll find loaded with chips. They go to the bigger stores and say, "Well, I buy in bulk." Well, that's great, but guess what? You're giving them actually 4 servings instead of 1. You go to your favorite maybe restaurant that serves Italian food, and if you break the food down and cut it in 4s, you would be surprised that you're actually getting 4 servings instead of 1. So watch what you eat. Start at home by cleaning the cupboards out. Like Philip said, pull all these processed foods out. Pull all the sodium out, the salts, and you're going to be amazed at the results you have, and you're going to feel good like Lolo. I mean, Lolo is like, wow, food actually tastes good. because we forget, and I'm sure Philip knows food is.
Yep.
Oh, you're breaking up on us a little bit there, DJ. Well, I actually need to take a little break here just to let our...
We need to say something about our sponsors, don't we?
Well, we do, and I want to also let our folks know who are listening in on the Internet that you can open the chat box on the Solutions Live page on Blogspot and type in any questions to either Philip or to DJ. And would also like, again, to mention Barbados. And a vital part of any wellness program is taking time out for a little relaxation and rejuvenation and even some romance and getting away from the hustle and bustle of the everyday routine. And what better place to get away than Barbados? Just that word, and especially since my husband and I have been there for that romantic weekend, just that word magically conjures up for us images of balmy tropical nights and soothing West Indian breezes and pristine sandy beaches that really are the envy of the world. And what a lot of people don't know is that Barbados is also the land of green monkeys and flying fish, quaint little rum shacks and sprawling sugarcane plantations. On our last trip, my husband was out playing golf, and he brought all these pictures back, and I was like, what is that? And he said, it's monkeys. They were all over the golf course. And, you know, Philip and DJ, I know that people enjoy their vacations so much more when they are fit and they don't have to cover their bodies with big oversized, you know, cover-ups.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about, okay, once you get started, and one of the things I didn't hear you guys mention, and I know it's a big part of The Biggest Loser because you've got to show that progress, is taking pictures. Do you really want to take pictures and take measurements? And, you know, is it important to weigh yourself on the same scale? I think I had mentioned to you, Phil, that I weigh myself at the Publix grocery store. They've got one of those big industrial scales, and while I hate doing it in public, when I weigh myself going into the grocery store, if I'm overweight of where I want to be, I really am very mindful then of what I'm buying. And if I'm underweight, I'm excited about that and wanting to stick with it. So if you do have a grocery store, that's a really great way to do it.
Yeah, there's a lot of places to do that. And I would say just do it about the same time every week. And a lot of the people that were on the show just decided to do it once a week when they got home because that was more of our schedule when we were there. Me, I kind of almost
discourage
stay
once
off
a day.
The scale, but, huh?
Do you? I'd like to hear from both of you. Do you discourage once a day weighing?
I like once a week.
Okay.
I mean, I think
DJ
daily.
Like once a week. I was so obsessed with it, I would do it, you know, morning and night or whatever. And I think there's two different philosophies. You know, some people can get really discouraged by it if they but I think, like, if you picked like a Monday morning first thing right after you go to the bathroom, you know, get up early in the morning and weigh yourself and write that down, that would be a good you know, everybody's different, but I would say that would be a good time for you to do it, and just do it consistently so you'll know if you're on a plan and you need to write it down. But one thing we mentioned was measurements. That's one thing that it's kind of tricky, and maybe DJ can talk more about that from being a professional, but sometimes you'll be losing inches. You'll not lose so much on the scale, and your body's shifting and things are changing. But I think that they're both important, and I think that if you can have that accountability of, you know, your doctor or your trainer or someone that you can that's watching you and helping you walk through the process, I think that's very important. What do you think?
One of the things I'd love to see you guys do in preparation for our challenge is I would love, DJ, if we could actually film you doing measurements in the right place. I think a lot of people don't know precisely where they should do the chest measurement and where they should do the hip measurement. I mean, the waist is pretty easy. Hopefully you can find a waistline. But, you know, I think it would be useful to have that kind of in our startup kit of showing people where you do those measurements so that if they don't have a professional to help them, if they do just have their spouse, that they can do it knowledgeably. And we could post that on YouTube and have that as a part of our startup kit.
That would be great. That would be a good idea. You also mentioned about pictures. I got excited when you said pictures. I can tell you this as well. We took pictures because of the series that we were working on every week. And the reason is because we wanted to kind of have them have changes as we went through the show. For the normal person that's at home and wants to get started, just get someone, take your picture. And the reason is, if you lose 5 pounds, let me tell you, that's 5 pounds that you don't want to see again. If you lose 10 pounds, 50 pounds, it's amazing to go back and look at that picture, and then you look at yourself and go, wow, I have made changes. I look good, and I feel good. So what am I going to do? I'm going to celebrate. I'm going to go on a vacation. And I like that you mentioned vacation, because now we feel good about ourselves. We feel like, wait a minute, I want to be out on that beach. I want to walk with my spouse. I want to be happy. And that's where all this starts, is from inside. So go ahead, take the pictures, make the changes, and feel good about yourself, because then you can look back and go, okay, I don't want to see that number again. And
right.
You just feel good about yourself.
Yeah. I thought I looked good in some of my pictures last summer, but then I look back and I go, wow, I needed to lose some more weight. But I felt good about the process because I had pictures of where I'd started. You know, I was at my midpoint, but I felt so good, and it's really neat to be able to look back through the process for me, because DJ did take my picture like every week, and he also did our measurements. So sometimes we wouldn't see the scale moving as much, but he goes, oh, look, you lost an inch around your, you know, around your waist. You lost 2 inches. You lost an inch around your calves or your bicep.
Right.
You know, I gained a little bit or lost a little bit on my bicep or whatever. Your chest is, and I would not think anything's happening, but I knew my body was reshaping. And I just want to say that we got more compliments on not only losing the weight, but we got more compliments than anyone on the way we looked, and our bodies actually reshaped. And I really just think DJ had everything in the world to do with that we, you know, we're 42, almost 43 years old, and people think I'm in my early 30s.
Oh,
and
definitely.
I really love that.
It took,
you know,
at least 10 years off of you, Philip. But you know,
yeah.
the thing I noticed, and it may have just been the pictures that you guys selected for your website, is you had some pictures of you, and these weren't the formal pictures from the show, but casual pictures. You had a lot of pictures of you that showed how big you were, but Amy she made it into an art form of like popping into the picture with just her head. And I think women do that.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
yeah,
you
I
may not have noticed
picture,
that, but
yeah.
I did. And I think about all of us who put our thinnest picture onto Facebook or LinkedIn, and that we don't really have pictures of us. And I think that is such an important first step, because it's such a milestone.
You don't want to admit it. You don't
right.
want – I always talk about walking through my house, and I know where all the mirrors are. And when I walk through my bedroom towards my bathroom, I get in my bathroom, I turn my head to the right. I mean, this got to be where I didn't even realize I was doing it after a while. I would turn my head to the right to look at the shower, because the mirror is on my left, and as I walk through my bathroom, I have a little dressing room before you get in our closet, and I have a mirror on the right, and I turn my head to the left, because I would always avoid mirrors. And it to me, when you go in someone's house and they have mirrors across the wall in their living room, I think to myself, that's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. Why would somebody want to sit and look at themselves? Well, I didn't realize that. I almost was just, I didn't like to look at myself, and I was afraid to look in the mirror. And I think that's what taking pictures will do, is they will make you look at yourself. And then it's not pretty, you know, I mean, it's not
right.
something that you want to look at. But that's where you have to start. And that just keeps going back to that accountability thing. And, you know, that's one thing they do. It's almost like they shame you into it on The Biggest Loser. And
right.
that's kind of what we're talking about. You know, we have to stand out in front of millions of people, but do it on television. And you think about that too. But if you have someone you can be accountable to, and you can be accountable to the paper, if you can be accountable to that picture, you're looking at where you're at, and you're realizing where you're starting. But then keeping those pictures as you go along too, it also helps you look back and see the progress that you've made.
Well,
so you don't.
That is really good advice, Phil. And DJ, if you can just, we've got about a minute left, if you can just give the one tip you would give beyond the accountability point?
I would say it starts with yourself. I mean, you really have to take a look at yourself and say, today is my day. Today I want to change. That picture on the refrigerator, that's my accountability. I'm changing today. I want to change, and this was something that Philip and I talked about, is tell yourself, I want to change. I'm going to change. I'm going to walk today. I want to walk today. I'm excited to make that change, and that's where it starts, from within. When you're ready to do that, I promise you, you're going to have some incredible results.
Well, DJ, yep. Thank you so much, and I am hoping that you can be a part of our 90-day challenge on the Blog Talk Radio show on Real Life Renovations.
Love
and
you.
For those who join us, you, when you're all done and looking svelte, you can go and discover the best that Barbados has to offer. They have a special Best of Barbados promotion going on right now. You can save up to $300 on airfare, get your first night free when booking 7 nights minimum at participating hotels and 5-night minimum at all-inclusives. You can start your day off in paradise with a free daily breakfast. That's after you've taken your walk. And then explore the Best of Barbados. They have a buy one, get second at half-price admission to participating local attractions, and then you can also sample the tropical fare with a free Barbados dining card. They have a deadline of booking this by April 1st. You can visit your local travel agent or go on their website, visitbarbados.org, for further details. And DJ, just before I let you go, how can people get a hold of you?
They can actually email me, and the email is very simple. It is carolinafitness@charter.net. CarolinaFitness@charter.net.
Perfect. Well, DJ, I am hoping that we'll be talking over the course of our 90-day fitness challenge, and I am looking forward to sending you both the before and the after pictures of me.
I can't wait to get them.
All right. Well, great. Well, Phil, I will be talking to you later.
Yep.
Have a great day.
Okay, and say hi to Amy for me.
I will.
Bye-bye.
I'll do it. Thank
okay,
you.
Great.
Bye-bye.
All right, we are going to be shifting gears from the physical side of things to the money side of things. And our next guest is Pamela Yellen, and she is the author of a book called Bank on Yourself. And let me get her on the line, and hopefully my co-host Chris Bradshaw will join us here in a few minutes. I see her online, and we'll just get her on the phone. Good morning, Pamela.
Good morning. I'm thrilled to be here.
So I heard you picked up the last few minutes of our Real Life Renovations.
I did.
Yeah, it is such a fun show because, you know, Phil and Amy Parham lost nearly 250 pounds together on The Biggest Loser last year's season. They didn't win, but they still won big.
Absolutely.
Well, great. Well, listen, I want to talk to you today specifically about your book. And I know it's more than a book. It really
Correct.
Is a program and every bit as much a lifestyle, I think, as what Phil and DJ were talking about on the physical side of things. And hang on just 1 second. Let me get my co-host here on the air. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. What a wonderful segment you just completed.
Wasn't that great? I can't wait to start this 90-day challenge, but I have been out doing my walk. So we're going to dig in here with Pamela. We're going to be talking about our money. And Pamela, just for those who aren't familiar with her, she has been a business consultant to financial advisors for over 20 years, and she has investigated over 450 financial products, vehicles, and methods. She has ultimately concluded that Americans have absolutely been brainwashed into believing that they have to risk their money in order to grow it. And she has been quoted in hundreds of publications, spoken to audiences all over the world, and authored several books. And her latest is Bank on Yourself, The Life-Changing Secret to Growing and Protecting Your Financial Future. So, Pamela, tell us, what is Bank on Yourself?
Well, it's a guaranteed way to grow your savings, but without the nail-biting and the ups and downs of the markets. And it's based on a specially designed type of life insurance policy, but this is a type of policy that you don't have to die to win. And the Bank on Yourself plan lets you actually get back every single penny you pay, including finance charges, for anything from a car to a vacation to a business equipment or even a college education, all while growing a nest egg that you can predict and count on. That's it in a nutshell.
Well, I had shared with you that my husband and I have been going through Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University, and actually we just finished the insurance lesson in his course, and you are at total odds with him on this particular subject of life insurance. So can we start there and talk about why you are so high on the type of life insurance that has cash value?
Absolutely. And I think that it would be great for the audience if we just kind of gave a very brief overview of the different types of life insurance. Everyone really does. You've been through the university and you have a better understanding of that than most people do. So there's two basic types of life insurance. There's the kind you rent and the kind you own. Now the most common type is the type that you rent, and that is called term insurance. Like renting a home, you have no equity in the policy, and you have basically nothing to show for it unless you happen to die before the end of the term. 99% of all term policies never even pay a claim, according to a Penn State University study, and even most experts agree that term insurance is designed to terminate before you do. One other drawback about term insurance is that the traditional types that they recommend have no inflation protection. So if you were to buy, say, a 20-year term policy, and over that period of time there was a 4% inflation, your policy would be worth 56% less. It would lose that much of its value. This is the type of policy that most financial experts recommend you buy. The other basic type, as you were referring to, is the type that they tell you to avoid, and that is called cash value insurance. Like owning a home, payments build equity for you. Everything you pay into it ends up building equity for you. The Bank on Yourself plan uses a very specific type of cash value policy that is called whole life insurance, but it has some bells and whistles in it that put the growth of your money in the plan on legal steroids. But it does that, of course, without the risk of stocks and real estate. Now, this particular type of policy, not even one out of 1,000 financial advisors or experts even know about it or talk about this type of policy. But in my experience, it beats the pants off of every other saving and investing strategy or method that I've ever come across. And as you mentioned, I've researched over 450. And here's why. First of all, you get guaranteed growth with this plan every single year, and you can predict the minimum income that you could take from the plan when you retire and for how long. In addition, your death benefit is guaranteed to grow each year, and that gives you protection from inflation as well. Neither your principal nor your gains are lost when the market crashes, and you know, during this financial crisis, there are more than 100,000 Americans who already use Bank on Yourself. Not a single one of them lost a single penny in their Bank on Yourself plans, and due to the market crashes, and their plans continue to grow. That growth is not only guaranteed, it's exponential. It gets better every single year just because you stuck with a plan instead of doing what people kind of have a tendency to do, which is like hopping from one investment to another. So instead of dreading, as many people do, opening their investment account statements and their retirement plan statements, you actually look forward to them because it's always good news and never any ugly surprises. There's one other benefit to the type of policy that Dave Ramsey and Susie Orman and so on do not talk about, and that is that these are dividend-paying policies. Now, dividends are not guaranteed. You do have a guaranteed minimum increase every single year, but the dividends are not guaranteed. However, the companies recommended for Bank on Yourself plans have paid dividends every single year for more than 100 years running, including during the Great Depression, and that's a pretty darn good track record. The companies that administer these plans are among the 10 financially strongest life insurance groups in the world. So in a nutshell, those are some of the benefits of you, of a bank on yourself type plan, which, again, meets several specifications. It's dividend paying. It has all these little bells and whistles, and this rider, there's a rider added on to it that makes your cash value in the plan, your equity in the plan, grow much faster than the type of plans that Dave Ramsey and others talk about. But you asked specifically about how does this differ, and why am I at odds with the type of policy, you know, when Dave Ramsey talks about whole life being a bad thing and so on, and many people agree with him. And I will say this, that I believe that Dave has unquestionably helped many, many people turn their financial lives around. And I agree with many of the principles that he teaches. We do differ on a couple key points. Number one, that you must risk your money in the stock market to grow a substantial nest egg. Number two, that any kind of whole life insurance should be avoided. Because, you know, Chickie, the truth is that the stock market is right back where it was more than a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
But inflation has slashed the purchasing power of your dollars by more than 30% in that period of time. Well, you could have gotten the same result putting your money in your mattress and skipped the nail biting and the sleepless nights. And the truth is, I mean, isn't that the truth? I mean, millions
Absolutely.
Of Americans are suffering, and it breaks my heart. If you ask, and I often ask this, I love asking this question, I'll ask it of your listeners. Do you know how much your nest egg will be worth when you're ready to tap into it? And most people that I've surveyed admit that they haven't got a clue. To me, that's a surefire prescription for financial insecurity rather than financial peace of mind. And there's a couple interesting facts about, you know, I've been calling them Wall Street's dirty little jiggers, secrets. Do we have time to go into what I think some of the dirty little secrets are?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, all right. And then I'll get back to, I promise, I will get back to the difference between the type of whole life policy that people like Dave Ramsey talk about and a bank on yourself policy. See, my husband and I have been investing in stocks and real estate and many other things basically since 1987. And we have never even come close to getting decent long-term results. When we got frustrated doing it ourselves, we hired three of the top financial planners and asset managers in the country to manage our retirement plan portfolio. And, you know, they all charge hefty fees, and all three of them lost us money during the longest-running bull market in history. A blindfolded monkey throwing darts could have done that. So we began to wonder, well, was it just us? Were we just like defective when it came to investing? So we decided to dig deeper, and we discovered some things that really shocked me and that Wall Street does not want you to know. And number one is that the typical investor in mutual funds has actually been losing 1% per year after adjusting for inflation over the last 20 years, and this is according to a very well-respected financial research firm called Dalbar Incorporated. And I actually believe that the idea that you do have to risk your money, you should risk your money in the stock market, and that will long-term give you financial security and help you grow a sizable nest egg, I believe that that is responsible for more broken dreams of retirement than anything else. And another myth that another reality that they don't want you to know about is if you actually start looking at the history of the market, it's the norm, not the exception, for the Dow to go nowhere for painfully long periods of time, up to 17 years, up to 25 years. I mean, how are we supposed to have financial security with that type of performance? And as my husband and I found out the hard way, hiring an expert isn't necessarily the answer. Research shows that 80% of all mutual funds underperform the overall market, and 80% of all investment advisors underperform the overall market. So to me, it's kind of like a losing scenario. So going back to what Dave Ramsey says about these types of policies, and it isn't just Dave, really, it's so many experts on personal finance. They talk about whole life policies that grow so slowly that you have no equity or cash value in the first few years at all. And they also refer to whole life policies where your death benefit stays level the whole time. And this is a direct quote from Dave's book. If you buy a $70,000 whole life policy and pay on it for 10 years, you may have $8,000 of cash value. If you die, the insurance company will pay your spouse $70,000 and they keep the $8,000. But, Chickie, a bank on yourself type policy is vastly different on both counts. You have significant cash value in the first year. They don't take your cash value in the same sense. And actually, I show very specific examples of that at bankonyourself.com that demonstrate very dramatically how this type of policy is different. And what gets to me is that when most of the experts are asked about the value of a bank-on-yourself type policy, they will dismiss it out of hand, usually with a comment. This is the typical comment. I think they all kind of see what everyone else is saying, and then they repeat this particular one. They will say, it's just another way for life insurance agents to try to put a sexy wrapper around something that's a waste of your money without having taken the time to learn the facts about it. And it's really not their fault. I talk about that in the book. This type of policy is so rare, it's not even covered in the standard industry training programs. But it's interesting. I'm so confident that someday Dave Ramsey, Susie Orman, and many others who paint all whole life policies with the same broad brush will actually take the time to learn the facts, and I've even saved a spot for their future endorsements of Bank on Yourself at bankonyourself.com. I mean, I actually have a spot for their endorsements because I believe that when they do take the time to understand the differences, that they will come to a different conclusion about this.
Very, very interesting.
It's
Chris,
a little
did you have any? Chris, I have monopolized the questions in asking about the clarifications on Dave Ramsey. Did you have a question that you wanted to ask, Chris?
Well, no, I just thought we do have a whole life insurance policy through our advisor. So now I want to go learn which kind. And maybe shift it a little bit. And it's funny because after, I really think highly of her, and I get really nervous every once in a while when you get inundated, because things go in cycles in the newspaper or in magazines, right? And during some period of time, suddenly there will be all these articles about why you're not supposed to do whole life, or, you know, you're supposed to do this. And it just seems that people jump on bandwagons over, you know, every once in a while, and it goes through cycles, and you have to, you know, close the paper and walk away.
You know, Chris, you're absolutely right. And Bank on Yourself, my experience with it, and we've been doing it for quite some time, it's not a new concept. It's been around for forever. But it's to me, the ultimate financial security blanket in both good times and bad. It's not a fad. It's something that you can use for a lifetime to build a solid financial foundation. I think one of the problems is that our culture has been trained in recent decades to invest with the goal of saving. And they think that investing is the way that's going to help them save a big nest egg. And in reality, it should be the other way around. You should be saving first and have that financial foundation. I mean, 71% of all people, they recently did a survey, the American Payroll Association, found that 70% of all workers would actually, if their paycheck was delayed for just 1 week, they would be unable to meet their current financial obligations. So we have no financial foundation anymore. Most people just have kind of, you know, but they might have money invested in the stock market. And to me, this doesn't make sense. There's somehow, our values have gotten turned around.
Right. So, you know, you've got the 401k. All that is taken away from you. You have no access. You have nothing you can do. One day it's worth one thing. Another day it's worth another thing. To your, you know, the most, you, if everything is invested in IRAs, 401ks, Roths, all of those things, then you have virtually, you have no idea of what it's going to be worth at some date in the future.
That's exactly the problem.
And there is no paycheck-oriented, you know, corporate-driven kind of savings method. And when you said that, I was like, do you remember the days when you used to have your Christmas account?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Right? Your special right. Christmas account, your special this, your special that. And people were saving, even
they
if it
were.
Was for a little
they
thing.
Were.
It, yes, yeah. They were, and it worked. And I remember that if that, you know, whatever you had saved in your Christmas account, that's what we were spending for Christmas. Period.
Exactly. Exactly. And actually, that's a really good point, because a lot of people, because with Bank on Yourself, we talk about how you can use a Bank on Yourself plan to get back the cost of things like cars and vacations and so on. And people sometimes don't quite understand what we're talking about here, and they'll say, so are you telling me that I should spend money that I don't have? And that is absolutely not what this is about. The average family will actually spend just under $500,000 over a 30-year period just for their cars and vacations alone. But by simply running those purchases through a Bank on Yourself plan, you could put all those dollars back in your own pocket and then some. Now, here's the way it works. The conventional way of buying things are like that you either finance them, you lease them, or you pay cash for them. Let's use a concrete example of a car. If you were to finance a car at the end of the loan, all you're going to have to show for it is your car worth whatever the trade-in value happens to be at that point. If you lease it, at the end of the lease, you're going to turn it back in, and now you have nothing to show for your payments. If you were to put away money in a savings account, when you then pull it out to pay cash, well, now you're earning zero interest on your money. These are all losing scenarios, because you're either going to pay interest if you're going to use someone else's financing, or you're going to lose the interest that you could have earned had you kept your money invested instead. However, if you save up your money in a Bank on Yourself plan, you can actually borrow it to pay cash for a car or whatever your heart desires, and the money in your plan is going to continue to grow at the exact same rate. Now, of course, you want to pay your plan back, unless you're taking retirement income, to get the greatest benefit. And I will make one other comparison here between what Dave Ramsey says about this. In his latest book, he has a rant. You know how he has those little rant sections? Anyway, he has a rant about whole life. Obviously, in response to having been asked about borrowing against your policy to self-finance things, and he says that whole life is a horrible product. Why would you pay interest on your own savings? That's backward and does not make you smart. But that statement overlooks the fact that you do finance everything you buy, because if you use your savings to buy things, as Dave and others recommend, you're going to stop earning interest and investment income on that money. That does not happen with Bank on Yourself. And furthermore, this is amazing, but if you use a Bank on Yourself finance policy to, say, finance a new car every few years, and you pay it back to your plan paying the interest rate that the company charges on loans, and yes, they do charge an interest rate, you will end up with the exact same equity in the plan as you would if you'd never used it to finance anything. But you will have had the use and enjoyment of the cars, the vacations, or whatever else you're financing through the plan. And so this whole process allows you to basically use your money in the plan and still have it working for you, and it allows you to enjoy more of life's luxuries, but without the guilt, because you know you're doing that without robbing your nest egg.
Pamela, can you tell us about your $100,000 challenge?
Yeah. Yes, it's very simple. I will pay $100,000 to the first person who shows me that they use a different strategy, a different method that can match or beat what Bank on Yourself does. And I pulled this strategy, I offered this challenge because there's just so much ignorance and misinformation about Bank on Yourself, and not one in a thousand advisors or experts truly understands how it works or knows how these policies are structured. So I really do encourage anyone who's still skeptical about this, go ahead, take the challenge. You can take it at bankonyourself.com and prove it to yourself.
Well, that
I put my money where my mouth is.
Well, that's impressive. That's absolutely impressive. I think the last thing I would like to ask in the last couple of minutes that we have available here is, with so many people that are losing their jobs and seeing large chunks of their retirement money not only disappear but, you know, already gone, how are these folks supposed to find the money to fund a Bank on Yourself plan? Is there a process that you take people through that gets them ready to do that? You know, do you specifically, do you ask them to go ahead and put that money in prior to being out of debt?
Not necessarily. The Bank on Yourself advisors are really masters at helping their clients free up more seed money to fund the plan. And there's at least 8 places that they look, and very quickly some of the most common ones are to back off on funding a 401k, IRA, or other qualified plan, at least on the portion that the employer isn't matching. Another is to restructure debt. Another is to move money into savings account that you have, say, in savings account or CDs into Bank on Yourself, because that way when your air conditioner breaks and you need a new one, you could use your Bank on Yourself plan to finance a new one and get the cost back. And sometimes we look at lifestyle changes, keep your car a few years longer, eat out less, and so on. But interestingly, the advisors will typically run an analysis. You might have people that are paying more than the, let's say they have a several hundred dollar minimum payment on a credit card on their credit cards. And some people will, trying to move down their debt, they will make more than the minimum payments, which many people recommend is a good thing. You do want to get out of debt. But sometimes the advisors find that if they run an analysis, they will find that if the person was, say, putting in an extra $300 a month to pay down their credit card debt, that if they put that $300 a month into a Bank on Yourself plan instead, they would ultimately end up with more money, be able to pay the loan off totally in just a little bit, but be recapturing the full cost of the things that they had initially put on credit card companies. I'm thinking of one example with a gentleman. He was in his mid-50s, and he was paying an extra $500 a month off of his credit card debt than the minimum, and he ended up moving it into a Bank on Yourself plan because ultimately when he got to retirement, he would have an additional $50,000 of money in that retirement, in his Bank on Yourself plan to use for retirement by simply redirecting that $500 a month. That was a huge differential, and he was still able to pay down his debt very quickly.
Well, you have given us a lot to chew on and think about, and I, for one, want to make sure to read your book and understand, you know, the complete picture. And I just want to thank you, Pamela. You have been very, very informative today. Can you let folks know how to reach you and also remind them of the title of your book?
Sure. Yeah, the book is Bank on Yourself, The Life-Changing Secret to Growing and Protecting Your Financial Future. It's at bookstores, Amazon.com, and also at bankonyourself.com, which is actually the best way to get in touch with us. You'll find a wealth of information there, tools to compare your plan against Bank on Yourself. You can get a report on what you can do today to take back control of your financial future, listen to success stories of some of the many people who came through the financial crisis with their nest eggs intact and still growing, valuable resources, and hear what the experts in personal finance say about this. And that's all at bankonyourself.com. And I know this is a different way of looking at things, and it's very eye-opening. And if there was one bit of advice I would leave people, it would be that you can take back control of your financial future. You don't have to be at the whims of the ups and downs of stocks and real estate and other investments. You can actually sleep well at night and still grow a sizable nest egg.
Well, it's really, really great to hear a positive outlook for once. I mean, we are so inundated with the negative side of things. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today, and look forward to giving you an update after I finish reading your book.
And, Chris, let me know what you find out about your policy.
I will. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you both, Chris and Chicky. I really enjoyed the interview today. I really enjoyed being with you. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
All right.
Take care. Great. We are going to now shift gears completely from talking about money and finance to talking about giving, which actually is a really important part of any financial plan. So our next guest, actually we've got two guests, and I only see one of them waiting here on our switchboard, so let me get them on the air and see which one of them we're missing. Good morning, it's Chicky.
Hello?
Good morning, Monica.
Hi. How are you?
I guess we're still waiting for your dad.
I guess.
Well, we're doing terrific. I've got my my co-host, Chris Bradshaw. She lives in Dallas, Texas, and I live in sunny Tampa, Florida.
Oh, cool.
What's the weather like in Toronto today?
It's pretty good, actually. Kind of warm, about 8 degrees.
And you'll have to help us out. Is that?
I was going to say, we have to translate that.
For those of us who didn't do well in Celsius in school.
I actually don't even know what's 8 degrees Celsius.
Oh.
I don't know Fahrenheit.
Well, that's okay. Suffice it to say, if you think it's warm, it must be warm. Well, great. Well, while we wait for your dad, why don't we just jump right in and let's talk just a little bit about what it's like having your story told in a children's book. Your dad wrote a book about you called Monica and the Zamboni.
It's really good because we get to share the story with others, and it's good because, like, how something negative can go into a positive, and I get to just tell my story to everyone and raise money for these charities.
Okay,
and
well, why don't you tell us just a little bit, since your dad isn't with us yet, we were going to ask him to tell the story of what happened to you, because as I understand it, you actually don't remember a lot about it, because
uh-huh.
It happened when you were 3 and you're now 13.
I'm
right?
Actually 14.
Oh, 14, I'm sorry.
Oh.
What happened was it was the Santa Claus parade, and my dad built a float thing for the kids. And so I was on it, and I actually tripped on my T-shirt. I was wearing a jersey, and it was really long. And I tripped, and I went under the rail, and I fell from about 7 feet, and I hit my neck. And I had to go to Sick Kids Hospital, and they thought I was paralyzed, but I just had a severe case of whiplash and a bruised neck. But I ended up being okay.
Well, we are very glad that you ended up being okay.
Yeah. It was us.
Now, when you've written the story, and basically, were you on the Zamboni? Was that the float?
No, actually. My dad got the Zamboni after the whole
okay.
accident.
Okay.
It was just like a wagon thing.
It was a wagon thing.
Yeah.
So, but now you have a Zamboni?
Actually, my dad sold it.
He had it
for a few months.
That's all right. That's all right. But it was the one from the famous gardens, right?
Yes, exactly.
From the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yes.
That must have been exciting. But now it's gone off to a new home, huh?
Yeah, in Australia.
Right, and is that a part of the story? I know your dad wrote the book largely because he got a little bit tired of having to explain why he actually owned a Zamboni to begin with. And
I can imagine.
As I understand it, he bought it because he thought that he could make a better float
mm-hmm.
that would be safer so that this couldn't ever happen again to any of the kids.
Exactly.
Now, see that? Okay, so that's the part of the story. Gotcha.
And Monica,
nice,
have you always had a heart for giving to other kids? Have you been involved in other charitable activities? Because I think it's pretty amazing for a 14-year-old to have this goal of raising $1 million. And the charities, again, are the Sick Kids Foundation and the National Children's Leukemia Foundation.
Yeah.
And how did you end up choosing those charities? I mean, Sick Kids, that one makes sense because it was part of your heritage of having this accident. Why the Leukemia Foundation?
Because it's really sad to see, like, children have leukemia at, a young age. And it just would be really nice to raise money for that charity, you know?
Well, that's really, really great. How do your friends react to you doing this?
They're proud, you know? Like, most kids my age wouldn't want to do, well, they wouldn't do something like this, right? And
right.
They're supportive.
So are some of them involved with you?
Actually, not really. I'm going to get them involved, though.
There you go. start with those that are closest to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, is there...
And Monica, you have brothers and sisters, is that correct?
Yes, I have one sister and two brothers, and they're all older than me.
And what did they all think about this, of their baby sister doing this?
They think it's cool. I don't think they didn't expect it, but I think they're proud of me.
Well, that's very, very cool. So when did the book come out?
It came out, I think, December,
mm-hmm.
Just before Christmas. Oh, last year.
So it's all still new.
It's very new.
Have you taken tours yet and done author signings?
I have done a few author signings at Canadian Tires, and we have done a new show, just like a little quick interview. And my dad's done a lot of radio talking.
Radio, just like what we're doing today.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And have you been on many of those?
No, actually. I think this is my first.
Oh, well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's
how
very,
special
very
for
cool.
us.
Yeah.
Well, I have been working with your PR person, Karen Ammon. She
mm-hmm.
has been just absolutely terrific in helping me get other guests for our show. In fact, our previous guest actually came through her as well. And I understand she is donating her time to this project for you because she is so impressed with you spearheading this effort. And Monica, you've got some ideas of how teens and other kids can help. Can you give us some idea of how you're going to be talking to other kids about getting them involved?
Well, I'll just talk about the charities, and I'll ask, like, even a dollar to donate would be great. Like, everything counts. And just to, like, if they could, instead of buying a CD or something, they could just give that money to the charities and how they could help.
That's a smart way to do it. Just start small.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, we had a lesson like that here in the United States recently where President Obama allowed people to contribute very, very small amounts and because of that was able to get many more people involved. So
yeah,
I think
exactly.
That's a very good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And, Monica, I saw that you all have set up a Facebook account for the charitable activity and to promote the book. And are you providing people with a way that they can give that money directly to the Leukemia Foundation?
Well, what we're going to do now is we're going to have, like, an event in May where they can go onto the website and just donate the money. And it's going to be for about a week that they can
uh-huh.
go onto the site and donate the money. We haven't planned exactly it yet, but that's what we're thinking.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, you'll have to let me know, and
okay, yeah.
we will certainly help you any way we can to do that. I had shared with your dad last night that I actually am in the process of setting up a charity for that is spurred by my daughter, and my daughter is just about to be 11. and she has a real heart for giving and, you know, wants to find ways to help other kids get involved. So maybe I can get her involved in raising some money specifically for this effort for you. I know she would love to get to know a 14-year-old who also had a heart for giving.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Her name is Kira. Oh,
okay.
And I would love to introduce her to you, and I'm going to make sure that she listens to this show today, and then we'll keep track if you will keep in touch with us by email and let us know when you're going to do that fundraising effort. I'll see if I can't get Kira to get some of her friends here in Tampa to be partners with you in that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, for sure.
So, Monica, when your dad ended up buying the Zamboni, he owns a Canadian Tire dealership, is that correct?
Yes.
And actually, I am very familiar with Canadian Tire because my former business partner was on the board of the Canadian Tire organization.
Okay.
And for those who don't know, the Canadian Tire stores are very much like Sears here in the U.S. It's a broad... they carry a broad range of things, not just tires, right?
Yes, exactly.
And has your dad always been in that business?
Yes, he has actually. He did do banking when he first finished university, but he only did that for a few years, and he's been doing that at Canadian Tire ever since.
Mm-hmm. So what did your mom think when he decided to buy a Zamboni?
She thought he was absolutely crazy.
now I remember reading that he had, you know, obviously this Canadian Tire store and thought that he could set up a skating rink. And I wasn't quite sure whether it was in the parking lot of the store or whether he had the aspirations of actually building an outdoor skating rink. Did that ever happen?
Yes, he actually built an outdoor skating rink in the parking lot so that he would draw in customers and they could just come skate and use the Zamboni. And, yeah.
Oh, cool. Did you ever get to drive the Zamboni?
Yeah, my dad actually did, and I got to sit on his lap.
Well, that's very cool.
Yeah.
And so why did he decide to make the book about you and the Zamboni when the Zamboni wasn't part of the original story?
Well, he wanted to, people always asked him why he bought the Zamboni, and like you said, he was tired of telling a story, so he wanted to tie them both in it, because they both had to do with each other, so he thought that's a good way.
Very good, and I listened last night to a call of the people from the Zamboni Corporation,
uh-huh.
who called him to ask him why he bought the unit. Have you gone to them and asked them if they would be willing to put money into the Leukemia Foundation?
Not yet, but that's a really good idea.
I think that should be a really good place for you to start, because if they could promote the book, I mean, because right now, Zamboni just sells their product, you know, what we call business to business. And, you know, you don't normally have people on the street who are buying Zambonis. But most of us know what a Zamboni is because, well, particularly those of us who grew up in the north. I grew up in Wisconsin and went ice skating and have been to hockey games. And maybe people in Florida don't know so much. But I think it's really good public relations for them.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think that would be a really good place for you to start. And I suspect that there are other corporations in Canada and in the U.S. as well that, you know, have a formal charitable giving program that would be interested in backing what you're trying to do as well. So you picked $1 million as your goal. Do you have any idea other than this campaign in March, in May, of how you're going to get there?
I guess I'll just start off slow, and hopefully people will give some money, and hopefully we'll reach that $1 million mark.
And so the book sales itself are a part of that. Now, today I noticed that the book is available on Amazon, and you guys are also selling them in the Canadian Tire store. Is it just in your dad's store, or is it in stores across Canada?
It actually isn't across Canada, and there's a website that you can go to buy the book, MonicaHealy.com. And I don't think it's in every single Canadian Tire store, but it's in a lot of them.
Got it.
Monica, can you give that website again?
Sure. MonicaHealy.com.
MonicaHealy.com, and you spell
and that's
Healy.
H-E-A-L-Y.
Exactly. Yeah. And so the book has been out just a few months.
Yes.
And so people will be the first one on their block with the book, and
exactly.
They'll be able to contribute.
Mm-hmm. And the proceeds go to Sick Kids Hospital.
That's right.
And the
community. And Monica, what age child is this book geared for?
I think it's 3 and up.
Okay.
Yeah, 3 and up.
All right. Well, terrific. Well, can you tell us a little bit about what you do when you're not trying to raise $1 million? Tell us what the life of a 14-year-old in Canada is like.
I horseback ride. I do equestrian, which is I show jump, and I compete a lot in the summertime, and I ride all year long. And I also play volleyball on the school team. And I like sports a lot, so I do that a lot.
And so how is it that you're able to ride year-round? Is there an indoor equestrian place near you?
Yes.
Very interesting. Well, maybe you can come up with an equestrian event to raise money.
Yeah, that'd actually be a good idea.
Well, very, very interesting. And how do you do in school?
My grades are actually, last year they were all right, but this year they're a lot better. I have an 80-something average, so.
What is your favorite subject?
Pardon?
What is your favorite subject?
Probably gym. I go to a sports school in Markham, so we're really based around sports there, so that's probably my favorite subject.
And do you know what you want to do when you get out of high school? Do you want to go to college?
Yes, of course. I want to go to a good university. I would like to be a photographer, actually. And ride in the Olympics, hopefully, someday.
Wow. Well, that is a terrific goal. It will be interesting to see how you can blend all of your different interests in horseback riding. And so do you do photography now?
I just take pictures of, like, my dogs outside. That's about it. But I'd be interested in it.
Well, that sounds very, very interesting.
Taking pictures of your dogs outside is absolutely the best way to start.
Yeah.
And what kind of dogs do you have?
They're actually Shih Tzus and Bichon mixed, and we have 2 of them.
Well, Chicky, that's just like the innovation for underdogs.
Yes, absolutely. Monica, we had a scientist on last Tuesday who has all kinds of different patents, and he has, I don't remember, Chris, was it 8 Bichon Frise?
At least 6. At least 6.
Right, and one day he took a nap on his couch, and all of the dogs apparently climbed up on top of him during his nap, and his son Jacob walked in and saw him and said, Dad, I finally figured out what you do. You innovate underdogs. And so he ended up writing a book called Innovation for Underdogs, but it was a play on words about the little fluffy dogs.
That's so funny.
Well, I am really going to be interested, Monica, to hear how you progress. I think one of the best things you can do is to get linked up with other kids who have a heart for giving. And I have met, since I've been working on setting up my daughter's charity, which is called Kids for Humanity, kidsforhumanity.org. You can take a look at that on the web. And the reason that we did that is because Kira, who at the time I believe was 7 years old, we had just had that really, really bad year of hurricanes coming through, not only the Florida corridor, but, you know, obviously the ones that hit the Gulf. And, you know, Kira sat watching TV every day, and it's like, Mommy, we've got to help those people. And, you know, and I said, yes, of course, honey, we do. And, you know, just thinking that my husband and I, you know, would write a check. And a few minutes later, she's like, no, Mommy, we've got to help them. And then, you know, and then she said, I've got it. We'll sell cookies and lemonade. And I'm thinking, oh, you know, I mean, it's so sweet. But, you know, we live in a gated community within a gated community. It was Labor Day weekend, you know, again, right after these hurricanes. But we did let her set up a lemonade stand. We sent out a notice to everybody in the neighborhood and said that we were going to do this, and that if they were going to be out of town, that they could drop off a check made out to the Red Cross. And she ended up raising $1,100, and my husband and I matched it. And then she took all of the money to the Red Cross the following Tuesday. And, you know, after that, Monica, I tried to find places that would allow kids to volunteer their time. And, you know, any charity will take money. You know, that's not the problem. But if a child, and particularly the younger kids, I don't think it's such a problem for teenagers, but for younger kids who have a heart for giving, it's really hard to find places that will let them donate their time or their talents. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that you might do is talk to your, and I don't know what they call it in Canada, here they call it social studies, you know, that looks about what's going on in the communities, and talk to your social studies teacher about whether there could be a project of having all of the kids in your class put together ideas and to look at both the risks of the ideas and the benefits and how that money could be raised. And, you know, and certainly talk to the people at the National Children's Leukemia Foundation, because I suspect that they've got people who would be willing to mentor you in figuring out how to raise this money most effectively. And I think the more you can get your community involved, the more you can get your friends involved, you know, I think that the better, you know, the ultimate result is going to be.
Exactly. I just want to say your daughter sounds like an amazing person.
Oh, she is. She is. And, you know, it's been really interesting because, unfortunately, as you are finding out, to actually set up a formal charity takes money. And my husband and I have been putting a lot of money into another business over the last couple of years, so we haven't been able to formalize setting up, you know, this foundation, you know, sparked by her. But as I talk to people like you, you know, young kids, and I've got another young girl who is going to be on the show early next month, and this little girl grew up in a homeless shelter because her mother, you know, had to leave an abusive situation, and they lived on the street for a long time, and she's now raising money with her mom, and I think she's your age too, 14, and you know, helping kids have the courage, you know, to make a good life for themselves, even though they are living in a shelter, and knowing that there is life after that. So, I think you're going to find that there are a lot of kids that you can put your head together with and figure out how to make this fundraising effort something that's really going to be a milestone in your life. And I think that this is going to be not necessarily a turning point for you, because it sounds like, you know, your turning point started when you were three and when you had what could have been a life-threatening accident, and it turned into something that's going to be used for the good of so many kids.
Yeah, exactly.
So we are very, very proud of you, Monica Healy.
Thank you, Monica,
for sharing, having your first interview with us.
Thank you so much.
That was been wonderful.
And you have done terrific, and I want you to know, and I will send, I think I've got your dad's email, so I'll just send it to him. But you'll be able to take the link for this show, and you'll be able to download the interview so that all of your friends can hear it, even though they're probably in school right now.
Yeah.
And so we'll make sure that you have that. And did you get to see the promotion that we put on YouTube?
Oh, I did. It was amazing.
Well, you know what, Monica? I am happy to do a generic, you know, not about this show, but a promotion for you for this fundraising effort. And, you know, if there is any other way that Chris and I can help you, and that Solutions Live can help you in this effort, you know, we are just happy to do that for you.
That'd be great. Thank you so much.
And I will most definitely have Kira listen to this, and I will find a way to get the two of you connected. She doesn't.
For sure.
She isn't old enough yet to have her own email.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a safe web environment that the kids use called KidZoo, KIDZUI.
Okay.
And they can do chatting with friends on that platform. So you might want to ask your dad if you can download that onto your computer.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you and Kira can do some brainstorming.
For sure.
Well, again, I want to thank you, Monica. And the name of the book, and it was actually written by her father, Mark Healy, the book is called Monica and the Zamboni. It is intended to be a children's book. It is the story of a family's love and triumph over an accident, which is basically the story of what happened to Monica when she was 3. And they are going to be raising $1 million, and we are going to celebrate that with Monica when she completes raising her $1 million. The two charities that are sponsoring or that she's going to be contributing this money to are the Sick Kids Foundation, which all of the proceeds from the sale of the book or some of the proceeds from the sale of the book are going toward that, and then the National Children's Leukemia Foundation. And hang on just a second, and I want to give out the email for website for the National Leukemia Foundation, which is www.leukemiafoundation.org. All right. Well, Monica, do you have to go back to school today, or are you off?
I'm actually going to go right back to school.
All right. Well, I am so glad that you could join us, and I'm sorry your dad wasn't able to make it, but it was fun talking to you.
Thank you so much. And again, I want to thank
Karen Ammond, who is the PR person, and she is with KBC Media. I want to thank Karen's organization for donating their time to this effort. It's a very, very worthy cause. And, Monica, I look forward to hearing updates and getting you connected with my daughter.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Terrific. Have a great rest of the day.
You too.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Well, Chris, wasn't she amazing?
That was just so wonderful.
It was
such a treat.
Well, and to do your first interview at age 14 and, you know, to set out on such an awesome, awesome adventure is what I'm going to call it, because she is going to learn so much through the raising of the money for these great causes, and she's just going to meet so many amazing people. I can't wait to hear how that goes.
Well, and she was so poised.
Yes.
And just, you know, it was wonderful. She was as poised and as together as any of the adult interviews that we've had the pleasure of conducting as well.
Oh, that is so true. That is so true. Well, recap our week. We have had a very wide variety of people on this week. We started off talking about innovation, which is always our 10 a.m. Show on Tuesdays, and we had the great grandniece of Thomas Edison, Sarah Miller Caldicott. And Sarah wrote a book called Innovate Like Edison. What was your favorite part of Sarah's story?
Well, you know, I think there was a couple of things, and then there's something I have to share that links Sarah with some people from a week ago. So the first thing I think was the fact that all of us think of Edison as this guy by himself in the garage, right? And her taking not the historical Edison but the business Edison and talking about what made him a success, and that he just – you know, used all sorts of people, which tied into the next person as well, right? So he just made sure he had all these people, and he made sure that he had the skills around him that his weaknesses were, right, to shore him up and make him successful. Now, the connection that I found after having listened to her was a connection with the Go for No folks. Remember,
really?
Remember them?
Yes.
So have you read the Go for No book yet?
I haven't.
Well, it's very wonderful. It's very quick. It's very easy. It's maybe 25 pages. And I've had it sitting in a few places where if I just sit there and wait for a minute, I pick it up. And one of their examples, you know, they're the ones that say, don't think about the yeses. When you're trying to do something, go for the noes. And by the time you get X amount of noes, you'll have had at least the number of yeses that you're trying to get. And inside their book, Go for No, they have the example of Edison.
Really?
And they say, remember when there's a story that we hear when we're a kid, when we're learning about Edison, that says, you know, I didn't fail to get a light bulb to work 1,000 times. I just found 1,000 ways it doesn't work.
Right.
Right? And then they say that what he wanted to do was exponentially fail, right? He wanted to go for no and get even more no's, so he hired more people, even though they were less skilled, less smart than he was. And he had hundreds of people, well, maybe not hundreds, but even more people.
Said he had 150 companies.
Well, there you go. So he had hundreds of people working as fast as he could, failing fast, going for no fast, finding as many possible ways as it wouldn't work so that he could find the one way it would.
I love that. I love that. And, you know, the thing that really impressed me about her, and you're right, she did talk about not what he did, but how he did it. And Sarah has unearthed out of what Edison did a number of what she calls power patterns. And
yeah.
She actually has a company called powerpatterns.com, and where she focuses on the process behind the innovations. And, you know, I think you were the one who brought up the subject of 3M. And, you know, you were asking about the corporate culture, and
mm-hmm.
she talked about how they have actually invested a lot to understand their culture and came up with this whole notion of people who are adapters, who are basically the low-risk kind of people, the
exactly.
innovators who are the high-risk, and then balancing them out with implementers and clarifiers. And, you know, I've heard the implementation and the innovator and the adapter, I mean, different models use different terms. But
right.
the clarifier, that was the one that jumped out at me because, you know, you really do have to have that person who is adept at saying, you know, that's the one thing about that is failing. And it isn't the whole idea. It's
no.
this one little aspect of it. And I know you and I have talked about this a lot in our own industry, in the travel industry where we've spent most of our adult life. You know, the industry as a whole has a lot of things that work, but they're little, well, not little, not the biggest part of the industry that doesn't work is the business model and the actual way that monies flow from you know, one person to another. And the consumers never get to see that. But that's why companies are losing money, is the business model's wrong. So, you know, I just love that about her, that she has distilled that down to a power process that says you've got to have the right people working together, you know, to find those things. And
I know, and I'm
team.
Still looking forward to going and figuring out what kind I am, in her, according to her book, right?
Yes, yes, and actually I got on her mailing list, and she sent out a note this morning, adapter or innovator, which are you? So if you'll go
cool.
on to powerpatterns.com, I'm
will.
Not exactly sure what it was I signed up for, whether this was her blog. It looks like a newsletter or e-zine. So I encourage those who didn't get to listen to Sarah to go back and listen to the Tuesday show, and it was the first segment on that show. Again, her company is Power Patterns, and I love the tagline, igniting innovation. And
yep.
I want to be ignited. I mean, I'll tell you what, that word excites me.
It was right up your alley.
Definitely.
All right, so, and next, who did we have next?
Next
I know you have
on,
that.
Yes, to Jane Goldner. And Jane was talking to us about the overall topic of leadership, But she wrote a very cleverly written book called Driven to Success. And I don't know if you've had a chance to pick it up yet, but it's called The 10-Point Checkup for Achieving High Performance in Business. And throughout it, she's using the car and driving metaphor. And whether, you know, you're driving a car down the street or you're a race driver, you know, the principles that she has used in the book kind of relate back to the whole car metaphor.
Metaphors definitely make things easier to understand.
They do. And a picture, I know for me, you know, if I've got a book that has diagrams and models, you know, I get through that much easier than a book that, you know, is just all words. And it's one of the reasons, I mean, you brought up Go For No. And I actually do have the book, and I have wanted to read it, but it is such a small book. It has gotten sandwiched between something, and I need to go find
it. Well, that's the thing. You know, it's a small enough book, actually, you can stick it in your purse and just kind of glance through it.
Yes.
And I had a hard time. You actually have to go to their website. You cannot buy Go For No at the bookstore.
Okay, well, they sent it to me before.
But I just want the audience to know they can't pick up Go For No at the bookstore.
Okay, well, that's good. But what I was going to say is that is the other genre that I do really well with right now, which is the allegorical, you know, storytelling of trying to get a point across. But, again, with Jane's book, she goes through this 10-point structure of assessing how well your company is doing, defining and articulating the core of your company. And we actually spent a lot of time on the call about what that core is.
That's right.
And, you know, and she said the one thing that stuck out for me is she said you have to know the legacy that you want to leave. And we talk a lot on this show about legacy.
Right. What's your goal? What are you trying to accomplish?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really that's a really good segue to Edward as well.
Right. And Edward is the CEO of Nuance Marketing, and I asked him to be on because I was introduced to him actually by the same person who introduced me to Sarah Miller Caldicott, and that was Lana Kim, Svetlana Kim, who we had on a few weeks ago, talking about her experiences of leaving Russia. And coming to the U.S. with a dollar in her pocket. And Edward is actually helping her promote her book, which is called White Pearl and I. And so Edward was talking to us about kind of the nuance of growth, and his company, again, is Nuance Marketing. And he got very, very practical and said that, you know, you don't need to spend so much time on, you know, working on your mission and vision. You know, you really have to have the tactical plan.
Yeah, I thought he had very practical advice and advice that was easily, I think, kind of brought home, if you will, right? Don't know what other word to use for that. So he just was a pleasure to listen to. You know, Tuesday's session was just every single one of them very full of energy, very exciting. You know, I'm so bad. I just forgot the name. The woman in the middle.
Jane Goldner.
Jane, yes, the Goldner. She actually is a potential interview for the Escape from Corporate America Club.
Yes, definitely.
That was great. You know, she told the story about, you know, being a corporate escape artist, really. And, you know, and it so resonated, and I think it would resonate with anyone when she told her story of, you know, losing her job for the first time she ever got laid off.
Right.
Yeah.
And
so then,
as we moved on then, and I wasn't sure how long you hung on the phone, because we do that last segment with my co-host Pamela Skillings, who is the author of Escape from Corporate America. And we call that segment at 11:30 Corporate Escape Artists. And this week we had Shannon McCaffrey. And Shannon had an interesting story because she had actually been laid off a whole bunch of times, and I think even from the same company, and they kept rehiring her. There was a part of her, you know, and she had done a lot of marketing work there was a part of her, you know, that really longed to be out on her own and to be more of a strategist and a coach in helping others. And so that's precisely what she's done. She's now, she's actually got a company called MarketingImplementer.com. And I thought, what a great URL. It actually, you know, it is exactly what it says it is. And she's put together some very, very practical tools to do that.
Very exciting. And yes, I did listen in, and I thought she was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I'm excited to get a hold of the book that she's a contributing author to. She has a chapter that she's contributed to a book called Women on Fire, 20 Inspiring Women Share Their Life Secrets and Save You Years of Struggles.
Oh, now, just that right there.
Oh, no kidding. And
Save Me Years of Struggles, please.
Exactly, and when that book comes out, I definitely want to have her as a guest on our Executive Girlfriends group, which for those of you who haven't heard, Chris and I are on the board of an organization called the Executive Girlfriends Group, which we lovingly call EGG. And right now, we've got members of that group across the country, and we are expanding into Europe. The thread that holds us all together is really the travel industry, but we are already expanding. We've got people from Microsoft and people from Oracle and people from USA Today and American Express and a number of entrepreneurial businesses as well, people who are in PR and design and advertising and certainly a lot of us who are consulting and a number who are in transition, or as we like to call it on Solutions Live, being on sabbatical and finding time to reinvent themselves. So I think that there are a lot of particularly women who we have been interviewing on that half hour on Tuesdays at 11:30 that would be perfect to transition over to our egg group.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. So let's shift to today's group.
Yes. Well, as I had told you, you know, I have just been wanting for so long just to get healthy. And, you know, I know it is so easy for us, particularly as women, to focus on the weight thing as the goal. But I know over the last couple of years, Chris, you have been working hard when you are in Dallas, and I know you've been traveling and commuting a lot really over the last, gosh, 3 or 4 years, and you found a trainer. How is that working for you?
Well, you know, I had a trainer for a number of years, and actually I commuted for almost 8 years, so we won't go there.
Wow.
But I did.
It went by so fast, but maybe not for you.
Exactly. So Monday through Thursdays, I would commute, and I'd be home on Fridays. And I found a trainer that my husband and I shared, and I would see him first thing on Friday mornings. And there was so often that I would miss him, or I'd get stranded in a flight that, you know, didn't get in on time, or different things like that. But it was really good, and I felt very strong, and I felt very powerful, and it helped in every aspect of my life. But then for a number of years, I didn't do that. So this last few months, I've actually gone to the Y, because we had belonged to one club, very nice club, one of those wonderful upscale clubs that we belonged to for like 10 years. And we canceled that and followed our trainer because he left. And then I said, you know what, I don't want to drive all the way over there just to see him because I'm not seeing him, it's not working, the schedule doesn't work. I joined the Y around the corner, and they have a computer. And you work with a trainer every once in a while.
Uh-huh.
But the trainer then puts your goals into the computer. Every time you show up to the Y, you go to the computer, it prints out your workout plan, and you go follow it.
Wow.
And it's wonderful. It's great. You know, it's got the machines, it's got your reps, it's got your weights, it teaches you how to do everything, it's got the stretches you need to do, it's got the cardio you need to do. You update the computer when you're done, and then you see a little pie chart that shows you what you've been doing, if you did anything, you know, away from the why, like I go to yoga, which I think is the thing that keeps me sane, And I put that in there, put in when I did it. So I think, you know, there are ways, to your point earlier with the params this morning, right? There are ways to do this that's not really costly. Get yourself started, and it's easy to maintain.
Well, I think that's really the point. And the show that we launched at 10 o'clock with Phil and Amy, and each week, you know, we kind of vary. Sometimes we have both of them on the show. Lately, what we've been doing is having one or the other and then having a guest that was a part of their what we're calling Real Life Renovations, which is the name of the show moving forward. Because this isn't, again, just about weight. Sometimes it's about people who come to them with health problems. Maybe it's high blood pressure or a family propensity toward diabetes. And, you know, Phil and Amy are trying to help them on all different levels. And we are working on crafting a 90-day challenge that we're going to be launching on this show. And it's probably going to be in the middle of April that we get that launch. We've got a few things that we want to have in place before that. But our guest today was DJ Jordan, who was... If you listen to the segment, you'll know that he actually became their trainer after they left the farm, which is where the bulk of the initial training happens with the NBC Biggest Loser show. And I thought it was interesting that Phil said that most of the people, when they came home at that juncture, because then, again, they had to go back later for the final segment of the show and to determine who was going to be the biggest loser.
The final weigh-in, I guess.
Right. And, you know, they had more success in losing during that time frame than anyone else who was on the show.
After the farm time frame, during the gone-home period, right?
Yes, because you have to go home. You have to go back to work. You have to go back to all the family.
You have to go back to real life.
Yeah. Back to what it was that got you, in Phil and Amy's
in such great shape.
Case, you know, they were morbidly obese.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting because I was looking at Amy's weight prior to the show, and she actually weighed very similar to what I weigh right now. I am fortunate enough to have, I think, about 5 or 6 inches on her. So, you know, I've got the tall thing going for me.
But not as bad, right?
Right, but it is still bad, and with my family history of heart disease and stroke, you know, I just can't play around with it, and so I am excited to actually enlist DJ's help in getting Phil and Amy and I to put this program together so that when we do launch in April, we will have a packet of information that we can send out to all of our listeners who want to be a part of that challenge and really provide some of that support that we were talking about that is so very important. You know, the accountability, you know, somebody to who can be your cheerleader and, you know, who can just help you along the way. So we're going to be putting together that tool set, and so I'm anxious to get different ideas from our listeners of things that have worked for them. So that was pretty exciting. And then next guest was Pamela Yellen. And Pamela has developed a program and written a book called Bank on Yourself. And has some very, very strong opinions, and she's willing to back those up actually with a guarantee. She's got a $100,000 challenge that she's putting out you know, to anybody who has a program that yields better results than what she does. That's a pretty strong challenge.
Pretty powerful.
It is. So I can't wait to read her book. I actually didn't have a chance to do that before we did the show.
I thought that was very powerful. It was very thought-provoking. You know, it does go against conventional wisdom. But I think you and I, over the years, have also learned that in business often the best thing is to go against conventional wisdom. And there's, you know, it's also the case that, you know, things like pharmaceuticals, you know, if there's money to be made, there's somebody willing to market it and sell it. And, you know, sometimes the best solution is just the vinegar and water, You don't have to buy Windex.
Right.
So, right? But Windex convinces you they do because they've got, you know, all this marketing to go out there and people are making money off of that. So, I don't know. It was very compelling, something I think definitely deserves a few moments of our time.
I'm going to follow it up, though, with getting somebody from the Dave Ramsey organization on the show because I've mentioned several times that Michael and I are going through Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University. And one of the things that appeals to me about his methodology, and again, I'm just more familiar with it, today was really the first day I heard in detail about Pamela's outline, is that he really believes that we must first get out of debt, and that all of the efforts initially are all toward becoming debt-free, and the power and the freedom and the peace that comes with not owing anyone any money.
There's a huge emotional peace of being debt-free. Absolutely.
Totally. And I don't know if I shared last week on the show, Chris, but Sergey, who is our son, who is 8 years old, now at dinner, and he and Kira have been praying for our business for some time. I mean, they realize that we've been behind the curve, particularly on our consulting business, and they've been praying, you know, that God would bless our business. And now Sergey tags onto that, so that we can be debt free. You know, which if you've ever listened to Dave Ramsey, that is Dave Ramsey's voice that has somehow migrated into my 9-year-old child. So anyway, you're right. It is emotional, but building wealth is pretty emotional too. So I think that one of the things that you and I have always embraced is that intellectual curiosity of finding out and ferreting out the right things. And again, maybe it's conventional wisdom and maybe it's those who go against it. The thing I love about Pamela is that she has done so much research, and she has actually been consulting not as a financial advisor to consumers, but she's been a business consultant to financial advisors for 20 years. So I think has probably seen, you know, a lot of the good and the bad over those years. And I would love to talk to her more about that, of what she has seen that those people have done in their businesses that hasn't been positive.
Well, when you do talk to her about that, let her know that she needs to talk to Edward Cates, because when I was looking for her website and looking it up and typed bank on yourself in the search field for Google, et cetera, the actual bankatyourself.com website does not come up.
Uh-huh.
So she needs some help there.
Right, absolutely. Well,
who can help her, so let her know next time you talk to her.
I do. I'm actually trying to figure out what things I can barter with folks to get some of their services. I'm trying to figure out what I can offer to a personal trainer here in Tampa.
There you go. See?
Yeah, because we'd very much like to get that accountability.
And, you know, bartering would be a nice topic to have as well, because that is really gaining in popularity. And a lot of people are getting involved in that. And, you know, and I know a lot of people in small businesses have continued to do it over the years, and it's never really gone out of style. But many of us, whether we're in transition, on sabbatical, or whatever, that's kind of a new concept, and it's hard to learn and figure out how to either charge for your services or you know, what they're worth. So I think that might be a good topic, Chickie.
I think that would be a great topic. And, you know, it's been so interesting over the course of the last few months as my husband and I have been trying to tighten up our spending and looking at where we can find excess. There were a couple of things that were, you know, kind of the obvious thing. We're fortunate enough to live in a home that has a pool. And, you know, it's like, man, how can we justify having a pool service come in when that's something that, you know, Michael can easily test the pool and put in the chemicals in. But, you know, when he talked to our pool guy, and we were one of his first customers 5 years ago when our previous guy retired. Sadly enough, he died, but his wife wasn't able to sell the business but turned everything over to this young guy. And when we told him that we were going to have to stop his services, he said, no, absolutely not. I'm going to continue to do this for you. And when you're back on your feet, you're going to take care of me. And, you know, I'm going to look at that as a bank account. And that money. And I thought, wow, I mean, this kid, he can't be more than 25. And, you know, I would like, and maybe that's what I will do, is reach out and perhaps you can do a little bit of research to see if anybody has written books on bartering as a business methodology. And maybe I can ferret out some other people like this young guy who are finding ways to build their business and build you know, their credibility and loyalty. I mean, oh my gosh, you know, if anybody wants to know about a pool guy, who am I going to talk about?
Right.
You know, but if he had just said, okay, well, I understand, and walked away, which is essentially what our lawn man said, you know, who we have had around forever, you know, it's interesting what's going to happen during this economic time and as things do start coming back.
Well, and I think what you just demonstrated, it's interesting how different people take it and handle it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm sure, you know, their personal situations have something to do with that, and clearly coming in and taking care of a pool is, you know, less of a time investment than, you know, having to mow the lawn and trim the shrubs and bushes and do all of that. But you know, again, business attitudes right now, I think, is another area that we could look at. What other subjects do you think that we need to touch that we haven't? You know, we've already done, like, I think I counted 78 shows since we launched on February 3rd. And we've covered an awful lot of topics. Is there anything that you have wanted to talk about, Chris?
Well, I just want to say, yes, we've covered an awful lot of topics, and I think every time I see the caliber and the, you know, and hear the people that you have lined up to interview, I'm just so amazed and so pleased. It's so much fun. And so, no, I haven't really put any thought. I haven't found any lack, if you will. Right?
Uh-huh.
I haven't found anything lacking. I think just now talking about the bartering, that was an interesting idea. And I really like your idea of bringing in kind of competing thoughts on different things, like this investment kind of challenge.
Right, right.
That's really an interesting thought. So,
yeah, definitely. Well, I actually reached out via Twitter to the Dave Ramsey folks and am waiting to hear back from them. You know, the other thing that actually came out this week, you know, as I've been talking to various friends of ours who are shifting jobs, is I have been talking to corporations about doing private label branded shows for them, you know, once a week, once a month, whatever works for them, of actually interviewing kind of best-in-class customer stories so that they can share you know, the success stories of their customers during these difficult times, and doing a show of actually conducting those interviews for them. So that's something that we are exploring, and I think that could, you know, raise up some new material for the regular shows as well, of hearing people who have really done amazingly well, even despite this really dismal economy.
I think that's a great idea, and one of the things that came to mind as you were saying that was, it's also the case that many of us would like services. There's things, companies or things we've thought about hiring or looked into maybe and not done, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it might be interesting to hear more about those, to provide the research for people like that.
Definitely.
Right. So,
all right. Well,
that's it. Thanks.
Anyone that has any ideas of what they would like to hear, we would love to get your mail at live@solutions.com. And I am going to play our closing music and want to let folks know that we are taking a hiatus on Tuesday. I am traveling to a major industry conference, so we will be back next Thursday. Thanks for joining us, and see you next week.
See you Thursday.
For more information about Solutions Live, please see www.solutionslive.blogspot.com. That's Solutions with a Z. I trust that today's show provided some information and some inspiration. Go out and begin to leave your legacy today.